And welcome back to another episode of a gaming podcast, episode 29, almost the big 3-0. We're almost there. And then there's going to be the sporadic naps after that, you know, just slowing down a little bit. My back hurts from time to time.
Knees
are killing, you know.
Oh, I've already got through that, man.
Yeah. Show us your ways.
Yeah. Sammy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Had a fun weekend that I think we're going to talk about here in a little bit. You know, just working, trying to play games where I can. I'm actually going through my backlog on Steam, which, you know, no one ever does. So I'm slowly doing it.
I mean, last time we heard you on, like, was it
Divinity 2?
Divinity 2?
Which came out like...
You decided to jump into that right after Baldur's Gate 3, so you only have yourself to blame for those two.
Yeah, that's fair.
How can you say you're getting into your backlog? Did you pick another long game?
Yeah. This time next year, I'll be done. It's fine. Yeah,
that'll coast you all the way through 2024, and then you can start playing all the games you missed.
Baldur's Gate 4.
Whatever the new DLC the for Divinity Baldur's Gate 3 is going to be.
Right, yeah, the expansion.
Yeah.
Steve, how are you doing? Steve Saylor.
I'm doing good. You know, today was kind of a fun day. Got to finally announce or put up the trailer of the Dungeons and Disableds show. The first adventure is going to be premiering on April 3rd. Everything's all up and running now. The podcast is up and running. The YouTube channel's up and running. The website's up and running. So you can go to dungeonsandisableds.com.
Awesome. I'll put that in the description of this episode.
Yeah, so I'm excited. I'm also excited to be able to see you, Marcel, at PAX, to be able to talk about it as well this week, and we're going to have some fun.
Rick, did you pack yet? I haven't.
Not yet. I'm doing laundry tonight, actually, just to be able to make sure. Yeah, but you're leaving tomorrow. I'm going to leave until Thursday. So.
Oh, okay. You got time. I'm leaving like midday, like 5 o'clock, so I got time, and the airport's not too far for me, so... And then Steve Monday, welcome back. How's it going?
Yeah, I missed you guys. No, I'm doing really well. It was a busy weekend. Mm-hmm. Part of it was, you know, we were going to talk about Toronto Comic Con. But then the other part, I went and saw a friend of mine and, you know, his family, his daughter and everything. And I got to do something very special. And I don't know if anyone else has done this or anything. Have you ever blown a child's mind before? Like, just absolutely eviscerated.
Yes.
That's what I was able to do specifically with gaming. So I thought it would be an appropriate story for this podcast. Mm-hmm. And that she just started playing Nintendo Switch. She just started getting into it. You know, her dad, he'll usually handle the controls or anything. But her game of choice, Animal Crossing New Horizons, she's all about it. Been playing it for like 6 months, building up her village. She like actually understands the game quite well for a five-year-old. I was actually impressed by how much she could like register and understand and everything. So she was super stoked for me to come over, check out her village and everything. Unbeknownst to her, I brought my Switch so that I could go over to her island. So she's going through it. She's like, wow, Steve, look at my house and everything. And I'm going through the gate. And then all of a sudden the screen shows up on her TV of like my avatar coming through the gates and onto her island. She's like, you could just see the face of like it clicking. And she's like, what? Like, I was like, yeah, Uncle Steve is on your island right now. And I'm moving around like in real time. She ran over to my Switch to like verify. She's like, this is a hoax, right? I was like, no, I'm doing this. Completely blown away. Like, I was like, this is online play, kid. This is the future. she was all about it. So yeah, I was happy with that. I was like, I did that.
That's awesome. That's you want to know what I used to like the blow people, the kids' minds with?
Yeah.
So year, like, this is like early 2000s. It's actually the year after 9/11. I went to New York with my dad. We volunteered for this like kids program that was running in New York City for like after, like, you know, underprivileged kids. And, you know, it was kind of like bringing them into kind of doing sort of like an after school sort of special kind of thing. Okay. But also it's just, you know, giving like a reprieve for kids, like, just, you know, in like of all the stuff, you know, they were kind of going on. So we would go and visit the kids and kind of bring him into this location, kind of do this really fun event where they do like games and like prizes and stuff like that, and concerts and stuff. But I was on the bus and I used to kind of blow them away with doing this. So I would stick out my hands like this, and I would just be like, okay, you want to see my arm grow? And then I would just do this, and then I'll let you know, let my arm grow. And I'm like, oh no, I gotta fix it. Hold on. And I do that. And I like, oh no, I gotta fix it.
And it would blow their minds about how, like, how did you do that? How did you make your arm grow? And I'm just like, they would ask me to do it over and over again. And then they would bring their friends who hadn't seen it for me to be able to do it to them. And they thought it was like a superpower. And I was like the popular sort of like counselor for like.
Got to do with the long arms. Yeah, exactly.
It was great.
Oh my God. Is there any, like, I have something here, but like, is there something that the current generation that you're surprised they don't know, like something about that blows your mind? Go ahead, Sammy. Yeah.
I was going to say, if you're just like, if you ask a kid, like pretend you're on the phone, they do like this instead of,
yeah, instead of this.
Yeah. Instead of the hand motion.
So it's
yeah.
just like little things. I'm like, oh damn, we getting old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or using, you had to like the dial. Yeah.
Like for me, like,
and you had to remember phone numbers.
Oh yeah. Well, or you had a book to write down the numbers and everything.
Yeah.
I remember I was watching a video just now and the guy, like he was reading a letter from someone who wrote something like a couple years ago. He's like, I can't read this. I don't know what language this is. And I'm like, dude, that's cursive writing. How do you read this? He's like, I can't read. I don't know what this is. I'm like, it's cursive writing. She's like, oh, thankfully someone translated this. I'm like, translate? What are you, what?
Oh, yeah. For me, sorry, Steve, I'll go quickly. For me, it's always, and this is going to be resonate with a lot of Canadians or Canadian audience and everything, but it's the fact that at a certain point when we grew up, TV just ended at like, 3 in the morning, they would just stop.
6 a.m. was national anthem.
6 a.m. and then you get the national anthem.
If I was up at that time, I would get hell from my parents if I was still up at like 3 a.m. But yeah, like,
crazy time.
Yeah. How many people here actually remember more than one phone number and it can't be your own?
I remember. Me.
Yeah, I do, really? I have 3 phone numbers locked and loaded here.
I don't remember any. I legit, like, I have no clue what any phone numbers are, like, on my family or anybody, like, my closest friends. Nobody. It's just, they're just a contact on my phone.
911 counts, right?
I guess 911 does count. Yeah, that's
a phone number.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't memorize being like, okay, it's, you know, 416, whatever. Yeah. Like, I don't remember those numbers. Like, other than my own, that's the only one I know. Remember,
even that I'm struggling with. I'm like, I don't call myself. I'm like, wait, is this the number? Like, wait, this is
literally the amount of forms I've had to fill out with like putting in my phone number. It's like, I've pretty much like that's locked into my head forever.
And what about 439 Pizza Nova? That's got to be locked.
4-9-6-9-6-7-11-11
Pizza Nova.
Which
actually, wait, I think the number? Guy who wrote that song.
Oh wow, local celebrity.
I can't remember his actual name, but we did like a thing for like a radio station because he had a bunch of other like hits in the 80s or whatever. But yeah, his most famous one was the Pizza Nova jingle. And we actually had him come in and talk about how we recorded it. It was pretty funny.
Is that still like live? Like, do they still use that jingle?
Oh, they still use it to this day.
Apparently it's on Spotify.
Oh, God.
Is it?
That's what I'm reading right now.
That's, you know what else dope. Is on Spotify? What's that? Get Connected for Free? That song.
The Education Connected.
That song. The whole, like, if you remember that ad. So that's
I do. As well. The Education Connection commercial.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
That's on Spotify.
Bring back jingles and marketing.
Do my my number one goal in life is to write a jingle for someone.
Really?
Yes. And I'm not even saying that ironically or anything. I just have a fascination with jingles, and I would love to produce one.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
I was complaining the other day I wanted, like, TV theme songs to come back. Do you remember, like, there's some shows you're like, man, I remember the theme song. And you're like, you remember that show because of that theme song.
Yeah. I think probably the one that stuck with me the most, or two. I mean, I think pretty much everyone here would know one, but the other one, they both know, but like maybe not the words to one. First one is Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I think every single person knows, like, in the world knows the lyrics to that. And then for me, it was always, it was kind of the Disney stuff, but it also was Where in the World's Carmen Sandiego? I mean, we get like, do it.
I hate that lady. She owes me $20. Where the hell is she, man?
But also, I mean, I guess, like, you talk about memorable theme songs, X-Men 97.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the most iconic.
Who was there? Who was there at the I want to know details.
What was the X-Men 90%
panel was like?
Let's go. Toronto Comic Con. What happened there? Spill the beans.
You go first, Steve.
Not much.
Wait, not much as in you're not allowed to say, or not much as in you couldn't see anything?
No, as much as I couldn't see anything, because Toronto Comic Con is always a chaotic mess, I guess. And what happened was we had the, you know, caboose. We were exchanging a plan and everything. We're like, okay, we're going to get into the screening, because they were screening the first two episodes of X-Men 97 on the Saturday. And on the tickets, on the website, everything, it's like 10 o'clock. So I was like, perfect. I mean, people are obviously going to line up before getting into the building and everything like that. But if we get there a little bit beforehand, hey, guess what? We're going to undoubtedly make it to the room, make it to the line. Up, get in there, because I did hear from the movie podcast guys seating is going to be limited. So I was like, let's plan ahead.
What time does doors open? Out of curiosity, is it like 9 or
it was 10?
Okay,
that's what they had it listed as for.
But I mean, like, Friday, for the general place, like the
whole convention. Like Fan Expo at all. I think like it was 9? Was it 9 that like regular doors open that like, yeah, they let you into the building.
I can't remember.
I'm not sure, to be totally honest.
But like it will suck anyways, that like if it's 10 and you go like get in at 10, I'm like, well, wait a minute. Like,
yeah.
How am I gonna match that?
It was 10.
And that's kind of what I assumed. I was like, okay, well, you know, you kind of get in at 10 and everything. I got there at 9:30 and doors had already been open and the line was capped for the screening. I was like, oh, cool.
No.
Was that Friday?
That was Saturday morning.
Okay. Yeah. Because Brad Shankar, is that how you pronounce it?
Shankar, yeah.
I was at the Femme Gaming booth and he came by and he's like, I came here for one reason and I couldn't get in. Oh, and I was like, oh man, buddies.
And truth be told, like I spoke to Aaron as he was in line, and then there were also other people like the movie podcast guys and then the Geek Centric guys and everything. And everyone was like, maybe you can like sneak in line. Maybe you could do this and that. I was like, I really don't want to, only because even if I were to get in and like maybe get into standing room, that just is going to mean that someone else doesn't get in. And as frustrated as I am with the organization of this thing, it's no one's fault in the line. So I'm just going to, I'll take the L on this. Mm-hmm. I don't really care about waiting a couple weeks, but it would have been cool to sit and see the first two episodes.
It's a shame there was no like media.
There wasn't.
But that's their thing, is like, I struggle to understand why they even have media passes because they don't really do anything for media. They're like, well, we're not going to organize the interviews, you have to do that yourself. There's no priority access, there's really nothing other than like a free ticket.
I think because the I'm gonna call it the Fan Expo franchise, whoever Informa owns them, but I think one of the issues is that they rely so heavily on like volunteers,
right?
And like they're not gonna organize that for you because that's too complicated,
especially that early in the morning for them. So. But like,
that's a bummer.
What about for you, Sammy? How was your experience?
I was there with Femme Gaming for the Saturday. I only went for the Saturday. But it was cool. We got to do a panel. It was funny because at first we're just like, oh, but like, what if no one shows up? Like, it's fine. It'll be fine anyways. And then there was like, it was a good crowd. It was like 20, 30 people. Talk about women in gaming, a little bit of cosplay, met some fun people. And yeah, I met Mona from Nanalan.
Yes.
Got
you as well. Yep.
Probably my highlight. Steve got the t-shirt. I'm very jealous.
Nice.
Oh, the Nirvana
stuff. That looks really good. Man, that's so cool. I kind of want one. Now.
That was so perfect.
You can't get that anywhere, like, huh?
You can get it online, but shipping's just $15. And I should have. I was like, damn it. I should have got it there.
Yeah,
but they also have
through
sweaters.
RetroKid, right?
RetroKid, yeah. Which was amazing work. Oh, nice.
Nice.
I love
The whole section was cool. There was a lot of like Lunette the Clown cosplayers for whatever reason too. And I was like,
they're doing a drop for
Become
the Couch. Mm. Yeah. I don't know if it's launched yet or they had it at the Comic-Con.
21st.
Okay, so literally on Thursday. Okay, cool.
Very
cool.
Tempted to drop more money on RetroKid stuff.
I love RetroKid. It's just such a so perfect.
I just saw Instagram with PJ Phil.
Yeah,
he has a shirt on there too. Yeah,
Did you see someone proposed at the NanoLand booth? I was like, this is real Canadian love. Yeah.
So
Mona was there, like in the background. They went in for like a photo op, and then all of a sudden the dude turned, got on his knee. I was like, this is a Canadian heritage moment right here.
That's true.
I love that. That's so cool.
I love that.
That's awesome.
But I'm actually on the site right now. I kind of want to maybe grab something, but I can't. Yeah. I won't be able to have it in time for PAX.
Oh, okay.
I bought a little Pochita from Chainsaw Man.
Oh, very nice. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been to Toronto Comic Con. I just assume it's just like another
Fan Expo.
That's why I gotta figure it out.
That's why, yeah.
Take away all the big like movie and gaming exhibits, and that's essentially what Comic-Con is. It's just Artist Alley. You get all the the Funko Pop booths and the vendors and everything, and then you get some panels, which is nice.
Did you go to the X-Men?
It's just North Building.
Did you go to X-Men panel though, at least?
Or? Yes. Yeah, I went on the Friday, which was nice. It was a kind of more of a retrospective thing where they're just talking about, recording and everything and that experience back in the 90s. Yeah. I had no idea that a lot of the recording and a lot of the voice actors are from Toronto. So it's a very localized.
No wonder they got them. I'm like, how did they explain?
They had a pretty good scoop.
So they opened up the panel just like complaining about Toronto traffic. I was like, this is Toronto for sure. A lot of representation here. So that was really cool to hear from. But in terms of anything new, I didn't get to hear any stories or anecdotes of them coming back together or anything like that.
Especially with the producer. They didn't release the same, like the day of when they were happening.
Super strange.
That's weird.
Super strange.
That was happened so
when
weird.
We recorded the last time on our last episode. Actually, we're like, wait, what? Like, I thought he's gonna be here this Friday. I don't know.
Not anymore.
So, but that's cool. And I hope everyone who went there had a good time, and make sure to check out your local Comic-Con festivities. I'm sure the next one is it's Fan Expo, I guess, right? And up in August. So
yeah, looking forward to that. Hopefully they get a lot more more vendors, because they really brought out all the stops last year. It was a really cool event.
I'm hoping for more gaming stuff. That'll be great.
That would be great.
Yeah. But it seems like this Friday is gonna be a very busy day, because Princess Peach was in Toronto too. She was up in Markham. I don't know if anyone of you went to go see that, but she was up in Markham. I got an email from Nintendo. I'm like, nope, I'm not going.
Why would I go to Markham? Okay.
That's another reason why.
Markham is known as the Mushroom Kingdom, obviously.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now she's going to Vancouver, Princess Peach and everything. And then Horizon Forbidden West also comes out on the 22nd for PC. But then, Steve, you tried out Dragon's Dogma, and you're able to talk about it a little bit. Stevie, that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm about 20 hours in with an asterisk there, which I'll kind of get to in just a little bit. So it's essentially just, this is very top level, very review in progress kind of thoughts, because this, I can already tell this game is very expansive, even just when you compare it to the original Dragon's Dogma, which came out like 12 years ago at this point. This game is, there's so many great things about this game. If you're looking at March 22nd and you're like, what game am I going to buy? And you go Dragon's Dogma 2, there is so much value and content here in terms of just the value proposition that you're getting in. It's hard to deny that you're going to have a good time with this game. If you are one of these people that are now getting bogged down with 100-hour experience and stuff, I think that there's some detractors in this game specifically, because Capcom and their director, they want you to like exist in this fantasy simulation world. They try to put as many blockades to keep you invested and kind of in the moment rather than power through to get to the finish line. And what I mean by that is that this game doesn't hold your hand whatsoever. And I mean that kind of in the best way possible, depending on who you are, depending on if you jive with that kind of thing. So you're dropped into this world. Thankfully, you need no prior knowledge to Dragon's Dogma. It's a very simple concept coming into it. you're attacked by a dragon, he steals your heart, and now you're claimed as like the Arisen. So it's kind of like this one-to-one relationship and dynamic that when there's an Arisen, there's some big dragon that you got to kill out there. That's
or watch the anime that's on Netflix as well. It's literally the same thing.
I forgot that existed.
So did I, to be honest. But in terms of that, the game essentially wants you to exist in this world the entire time. And what I mean with that is that there's really no use of fast travel in this game. If you're going from one area of the map to the next, you're walking with your pawns, which are essentially AI-controlled companions that all have their own, you know, stats and classes and stuff like that to really help you along the way. The game really tries to emphasize on kind of open-ended or open described quests, so that they'll give you a quest, tell you where to go. It's kind of up to you to figure it out. Similar to recent Assassin's Creed games that kind of work in the same basis, is that you can choose to have like that more, I want to discover it on my own. I don't really want you to tell me exactly who to talk to, where he is, stuff like that. So if that resonates with you, I think that you're going to have a good time with this. Other than that, I mean, it's a standard fantasy RPG. I think there's a lot to garner from this game. I think it's a very westernized JRPG in that there's always combat going, there's always enemies to kind of latch onto and kind of defeat on your way. It's just a very expansive game right now, and I'm just getting into the motion of it, where even like 20-25 hours in, it just starts clicking with me, where I was like, oh, this reminds me of Elden Ring, where there's so many secrets. There's so much that I myself, because I haven't put a whole lot of time into the original Dragon's Dogma, I'm questioning, like, what does this mean? What's this statue up on this mountain even supposed to do? Like, and then hours later, I'll talk to someone that tells me, and I was like, oh, okay, let me go back to that thing. And then, you know, I'm back on the road again. Okay. And you get a lot of contextual clues and contextual meaning behind the world as you progressively play. It's not just given through, you know, menus and tutorial systems and stuff like that. You're just actively learning. You're actively getting engaged with this world. And for someone like me who plays, I don't know, even like Starfield or any really Western RPG, I feel like they do a whole lot of hand holding the entire time. So that's kind of what I keep getting back to, is that it's nice just to kind of play this game and smell the roses the entire way through. As monotonous as some things can be, where I do want to fast travel to a specific town because I'm like, I just want to turn in this quest. No, I'm going to take a 10-minute walk. So sometimes, you know, I just throw on a podcast in the background. Like, I'm going to enjoy the views and everything. But there's a lot to love in this game.
Awesome. That's really cool. Did you spend any time with was there an option for consoles for the character creation? Like its own separate app or no?
No, not to my knowledge. You're just doing it in the game, for all I know. Yeah.
There's a PC dedicated like character creation.
Right.
Then you could just import that into when the game officially releases and everything. So
okay, so I think the same kind of thing is on console. For me, when I loaded up the game, it's just kind of right there. You're making your own character, and then you're making your main pawn, which I think is really one of the most interesting components of this game, is that you're making a pawn that follows you and is in your party the entire time. But then you guys could borrow my pawn, so to speak, and bring him into the game. I designed him as Winnie the Pooh. He's this giant yellow little guy. I call him Winnie. So if you ever see him out there, he's a really good dude. He's a real homie. He'll help you out. He's a mage. He's really cool. but no, I think that's a really cool thing, is that, you know, I could see your pawn out there, bring him into my game, level him up, give him weapons that I find that I can't use. So say I'm an archer and you're a fighter, I have no use for a sword, so I could give you the sword, and he goes back to your game and he's like, wow, look, I got this super cool sword that I found in Steve's game, essentially. So I think really it's a really cool like community based thing.
Was I able to like join your quest? Like people were saying it's like there's an online element. Is that the only online element, or can I come and join you?
So it's more of like a passive online element. There's no multiplayer in it. So okay. I'm in my own world. You're in yours. You're on your own quest and everything. It's just those pawns. So I can go up to one of the rifts, interact with it. You see like a giant crowd of pawns there, and you basically can select, okay, do I want two mages in my party? Do I want a thief, a fighter, a mage? Like, you can really tailor it specifically to whatever quest you're on or whatever your vibe is. Like, for me, I'm a thief. I have two mages in there, and then I have an archer just for like ranged attacks and everything. One of my mage, my guy Winnie, he's a healer. He buffs me up and everything, and then the other one does like ice and fire attacks and stuff. So you can just really tailor and customize exactly how you want to play.
That's awesome. Does he take honey as a reward or no?
No. When he's good, when you. Really cool thing. You give high fives to him after a nice battle. No way. Yeah. You're like, hey, my guy. You like dab him up a little bit. It's really nice.
That's really neat. Yeah, you know, I can't wait to try that game. It's just that this is another 100-hour, 200-hour game. I'm like, where am I going to fit this in here? You know, like,
it's a lot, and yeah. Especially, you know, coming off of Rebirth, this first quarter of the year has been so much. The one detractor that I've experienced in this game, and I want to put this out as like a red alert for anyone jumping into this game has just dog water save systems. The worst. The literal worst. So essentially what will happen is if you get defeated and everything, you can load the last save and you come back with a fraction of your health, like a fraction like of your maximum health will be chipped off until you get back to
a camp.
So that penalty chips away every time you die, and if you're not able to get back to camp, that's very unfortunate because that's just going to limit how much health you have until you can get back there. The other option you have is to load back at the last inn, or, you know, wherever you slept at an inn. Neither one tells you when the last time that was. And I had been certain that I slept at an inn. I know what an inn looks like. I know to talk to an innkeeper, say, I want to sleep in this bed for $2,000 and sleep there. Lo and behold, I got to this area where I was just getting my teeth kicked in over and over. I was down to like a fraction of the health. My pawns were dead. I couldn't revive them. Nothing was going right. So I was like, listen, I know for a fact in my head, I slept at an inn probably 30 minutes ago. I'll take that penalty just to go back, reassess, go back 6 hours.
Oh, no. Whoa.
6 hours.
Oh, no way.
And guess what? When you load in, that overwrites your last save. So it's not even you can bump back and go back to your last save.
Fuck. Man. So you lost 6 hours of progress.
I
lost
literally 6 hours of progress. That's not even hyperbole. That's not an exaggeration. I counted myself how much I had to go back through the game, skipping dialogue, just speed running. It was 6 hours to get back to the exact moment. 6 hours
even was just speed running, too. Yeah. Like, that's, oh, my God.
I'd turn
God.
Off the game. I'd be like...
I went back to Rise of the Ronin for a little bit. I was like, I need to cool down right now because I am livid. So this
I would have been like, nope, that's it. I'm done. Not playing the game again. I'll declare it unaccessible and call him ableist. I'm just done.
Capcom.
I don't care.
He's coming for you. No, so this is just a cautionary tale. Do not trust this system. I don't see the use of it. Like, because it doesn't tell you, hey, your last save at the end was on this date at this time. It doesn't give you that kind of context there. So I would just say, don't use it at all. Just, I don't see how it's a good system. And I think that really is the one thing that really detracted me from saying this game is like a must play, because I'm just sore. I'm just real.
And you can't save
at
any given point?
So you can, but it won't necessarily save you, say, if you're in like a combat scenario like I was, where it's like, I'm in the thick of it. I can't save my pawns. They're going to die if I just start running away. And then I don't know if I'm able to get them back from going to the rifts. So I really wanted to secure my two pawns that I recruited from other players. So I was like, okay, I'll just go back to the inn and lose half an hour. I don't really care about that. But lo and behold, Capcom had other plans for me.
Hopefully that's like a day one patch scenario or something.
All they need to do is just add a time and date. That's it.
Yeah.
Just so you get a little bit of a heads up. Let you do that, but have the save file, like your last save, be a separate save state.
Yeah.
just so you can be like, oh, okay, that's too far back. I don't want to do that. Load up, boom, you're there.
Yeah. Or at least have multiple save slots, at least.
Something like that. Yeah, they need to fix that. Because I don't know. I was salty at that point.
That's weird because it's like it's Capcom and they're not like they're not the easiest when it comes to save points, but you know, at least it's a little bit more forgiving. I don't know. That's weird.
That's really weird. So
yeah.
Hopefully that's fixed day one because that's gonna make a lot of people upset. So
that's
for sure. So let's move on to some PlayStation news. First of all, Hi-Fi Rush out today as of this recording. It is sitting at a 91 on Metacritic. I guess it gets a little bump up from the Xbox One. Apparently the controller feels really nice, a lot better. But the where feature it is on the PlayStation controller is. But go pick that game up. Really good game. Make Xbox bring out more games out to other systems and everything. Do it right now. Pay for it right now.
You know what? I kind of forgot that it was coming out today.
Not anymore. Go pick it up.
yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, okay. Sure. Yeah. All right. Yay. Hi-Fi Rush on PS5.
Steve, how was your Final Fantasy Rebirth, like quality-wise? How did it look for you out of curiosity? There's the reason why I'm asking that.
Pretty good in terms of visuals. Frame rate, not great.
Yeah.
Not great at all, to be honest. Like, even if you're playing on, like, the dedicated performance mode, okay. I don't even think I got 60, to be honest.
Oh, really? Would, would this rumor of a PlayStation 5 Pro help you maybe a little bit?
I think so.
Apparently it is... this is a really strong rumor, and from I love that a leaker is... If this guy leaks, it means it's happening. You know, like, I just love, like, the world, like, the news world we're in right now. Like, oh, he leaked it? Guaranteed this is happening.
Guaranteed.
But here's some leak information document that is confirmed, apparently. Rendering at 45% faster than the PS5. Hopefully it's also quieter. If not, it's going to be sounding like another jet plane. That's for sure. Two times or three times the ray tracing. Four times in some cases.
They so two as to well. Four.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. Why did you write it that way? So silly. 33.5 teraflops. All right. PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution upscaling. Upscaling anti-aliasing solution as well. Support resolution up to 8K. Now, listen here. That's great and all. But I remember the PS5 was to do 8K as well.
Yeah, and, I was and, about and, to and say. And we could
barely even get 4K 60 on the whatever. Okay, custom machine learning architecture, AI accelerator supporting 300 tops of 8 bits computation, 67 teraflops of 16 bytes floating points. And apparently that, you know, they're aiming for the holiday season, but hey, it could change, you know, maybe due to the leak. A good way to cover your base is like, hey, PlayStation might be coming with another, you know, like, I'm going to drop a leak right now. Nintendo's coming up with a new system sometime now between 2026.
But it could change.
It could change. It could change. Don't quote me due to this leak right now. Just letting you know right now.
Don't quote me.
Don't quote me. But there's a new system, a little bit stronger, you know, Mario might be on it, and Zelda, and another Mario Kart. There you go.
But specs can change at any point. But don't even worry about it.
Sure. Like, exactly. Yeah. Here's the thing. Okay.
Tell
this
me
this is
the
now
thing,
two.
I'm ready now.
New iterations of the PS5 in less than 4 years.
Yeah.
And including where there was about a year, almost 2 years, where we could barely get our hands on a PS5. Mm-hmm. So if you narrow that down, you're looking at about 2 years. Of when PS5s were readily available at stores, and then there was a new PS5. I'm like, okay, great, fine. You want to give us a new PS5 Slim, whatever. Ruins pretty much the cover market because everyone bought a bunch of covers, and now they're completely useless on those. Okay, fine, whatever. PS5, Sony's going to do what Sony's going to do. And then this of a PS5 Pro... When it's supposed to be giving specs that the PS5 currently should be able to do, but just because they can be able to make it 45% faster, they're going to, you know, put it out, you know, slap a new sticker on it, call it PS5 Pro, put it out the door in basically the equivalent of 2 years of the PS5 being on the, like, officially fully on the market. Who the frick needs a PS5 Pro, man?
Listen, it worked. There's proof that even if it's just a little upgrade, we'll spend $2,000 on a new phone every 2 years.
Apple mentality. I mean,
agreed. But usually every 2 years, there is at least a significant upgrade by that point. Like, I'm not the one, you know, to buy a new phone every single year, because that's kind of, that's what I'm basically, that's what the equivalent of this is. It's the equivalent of buying a new PS5 every single year. And just because they say it's a little bit better. I mean, hey, if it can guarantee that every game I play can actually be able to play at 60 frames per second and up, guaranteed, then fine.
For sure.
Give me the PS5 Pro. But the technology is not even caught up with the, you know, game developers and, you know, and the tech to be able to even be able to consistently produce that yet. I think this is kind of one of those points where the tech is powerful enough, but we can't get games up to that point to be able to do it. And normally it's the reverse, where it's the hardware is more powerful than the games, but the games are more powerful than right. the hardware, but I don't know who the frick needs a PS5 Pro, man.
Well, I totally get where you're coming from, and I don't necessarily disagree with any of it. My disappointment and my frustration isn't that there's a PS5 Pro that's coming out. It's that the PS5 overpromised everything. Mm-hmm. And same with the Xbox. Mm-hmm. I'm not even throwing shade at like Sony. I think both Microsoft and PlayStation kind of overpromised and underdelivered exactly what the new next gen experience was. I think largely it was all held back by, you know, this cross-gen support, this need to not abandon the last generation. But now that we're getting to the point where games are now just dedicated to PS5 or Xbox Series X and S, now we're seeing, okay, what can these consoles really tap out at? And I think really we're seeing it right now, 2 years into your point, Steve, where it is 2 years of dedicated support. We're seeing games like, you know, Fallen Order tap out. We're seeing games like Rebirth even just tap out in terms of its frames or fidelity and stuff like that. So I'm not really mad that there's a PS5, because to be honest, I think that as soon as a game like Grand Theft Auto 6 comes out, we're all gonna be like, yeah, let's get it on the better system, because we need it to just not burn down our house. That's the thing, because I don't want my PlayStation to sound like a jet engine anymore. My PlayStation 4 that I got day one lasted all the way through until Last of Us Part 2 and Ghost of Tsushima. That's when I was like, I'm in danger playing these games. I feel like I am on the cutting edge of this causing an electrical fire. But to your point, Steve, 4 years in, I've had the PlayStation 5 since day one, and I'm playing games, I'm like, this is way too loud. This is way too loud for my liking. So if we get some sort of big boy upgrade here, I'm a sucker, but I'll buy it.
That PS5, that PS5 box is a damn lie. It says 8K, 4K, 120 HDR, and you can barely even get 60 frames, maybe even barely get 30 frames on Final Fantasy Rebirth. What, like?
It's perfect for me because I got a PS4 Slim. That'll definitely be a mighty upgrade for me. Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at the timeline of the PS4 right now, just to kind of see, like, okay, when did they, you know, go from the original PS4 to the PS4 Pro? And this does line up with their timeline. They released the PS4 in November of 2013, and it wasn't until September of 2016 that they released the PS4 Pro. But I think that the difference between the two is that the PS4 was barely more powerful than the PS3, and they just kept reiterating it to kind of make it more powerful to keep up with the games that was being released. I mean, there was a 7-year gap between the PS4 Pro to when the PS5 like officially launched. But essentially, like, it just seems like the timeline's much quicker now, because it, like I said, it took like a year and a half for, you know, PS5 to actually be on store shelves. And it just seems that every year there's now been a new PS5. And it's not that much different. I mean, like, if it was as you guys said, if it was significantly different than what the PS5 launch was, I would consider buying it. But right now, I have to launch PS5. I have no interest in upgrading it anytime soon, except maybe getting, you know, a new SSD to be able to put into it, to give myself extra storage. That's probably the only thing I would want to be able to upgrade it for. But I have no interest in getting the PS5 Slim or the PS5 Pro. And I know you said GTA 6. Yeah, I probably will, you know, push the console to its limit. But I mean, right now I'm not hearing a jet engine in my PS5, and I don't think one game is going to do that for me unless it's just severely under optimized.
GTA 6 will be that game. Your system's going to be levitating.
That's a very poor art, like development architecture. If that's the one game that is like, oh, we're heating up all our thermals, we need to basically turn on all the fans. If it does that, I'm sorry, that's the problem with the game, not the PS5.
But I think there's also like a lot of assumptions just being made like across the board, like in terms of the industry when looking at this. We really just don't know what a lot of these buzzwords really amount to, you know, the PSSR, the upscaling, or all the teraflops, so many flops in here. But really, I do think that there is a real meaning behind, okay, so if this comes out holiday 2024, that aligns with PlayStation's whole, we're not putting first party games out until next year in 2025. Well, why would that be? Does Sony's internal studios also notice that there's like a bottleneck situation? Is this a deep heart? Like, I'm not a developer, so I really can't assume or take anything away from, you know, these specs and everything. But it just, to me, feels like there's a reason why 2024 is so sparse from internal studio software.
Yeah.
And then there's a pro model coming out to theoretically solve all the problems, open up the floodgates to, you know, a potential Ghost of Tsushima 2 or what have you. I think the timing of it all is very suspicious. Not suspicious. Maybe it's just it all aligns in a very practical way for Sony.
Yeah. And you're definitely right there, because that was one of the reasons why, due to the change that the lack of first-party game releasing for this year for PlayStation 5. So maybe there is an issue that maybe they wanted to address and be like, oh, look, it's a little bit faster. But like, and that's also the reason why they couldn't hit those targets that they say that they see, like, oh, this PlayStation can do that, maybe. So yeah. I don't know. I've seen many PlayStations, especially with Street Fighter tournaments, where like they had industrial fans blowing on it. And that's because you just had the game was just on for like all day.
Is this like a main thing that's happening now? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe it's just me, but I barely hear the fan at all.
Yeah, you have the one and only one.
I know so many people who have either replaced their. I replaced mine before the PlayStation 5 came out. I got mine out of the box and it was sounding like a jet engine. I went to PlayStation PR. I was like, this is unacceptable. There's something wrong with this. And I know tons of people who have had issues with their PlayStation making noises. So maybe you got the good one. Maybe you got the good boy out there.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe. Because I hear the fan occasionally, but it's not like it's, you know, jet engine fan. Like it's, you know, usually I hear it when it boots up, like from either rest mode or, you know, after it's had to restart for whatever reason. But I just have, I'm basically like sitting like at least about a foot, 2 feet away from it. And I don't. Mm-hmm. And I don't hear it at all, barely.
Apparently, it's a coil thing. That's what I've heard.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Which I don't know if something that was addressed with the Slim version or anything. I know because they changed something inside there a little bit, but
I feel like making something smaller ain't gonna help an overheating issue, though.
So. No. Unless it is like there is some like different like, you know, airflow architecture in there. But from what I understand, I don't think like the PS5 Slim, like the inside was definitely different in design wise. So I don't know.
We need Mark Cerny on the show. Walk us through it.
Yes.
That's who we need. He's the only guy that could tell us, really. Yeah. I mean, otherwise, I'm just a big dum-dum when I look at all these specs. 33.5 teraflops. What does that mean?
So I did look it up. Apparently, that's where the 45% graphics and performance increase comes from. Like that's what that that's what that translates to, is the teraflops and all that. So you'll get better, you'll get better graphics performance, but there's not that much difference in, like, that's pretty much the main improvement, because the processor is pretty much the same. It gives like a less than, I think it's like 1% or like 11, like it was like a 1 or 11%, I can't remember which one it was, but it was like a very minimal amount of like processor power increase. It's mostly just to graphics.
I also need Mark Cerny to explain what 300 tops of 8-bit computation means. That's made up. That's made up.
This is all made
up.
That
I don't know.
That's some like timey-wimey language.
This is like some lab coat language here. I don't know what the hell is going on.
How much of Cloud's abs can I see on this machine? That's what I really need to know. Otherwise, I don't want it. If I'm not seeing definition.
If I don't get 12 abs, I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
Know, so. Before we move on, Marcel, I want to know, do you have to talk about the PSVR 2 stuff to talk about today?
Yeah, that's good to just throw it in there.
He's
there
goes my segue.
Oh, sorry.
Great segue, Steve.
I didn't know it was... Okay, well, I didn't mean to do that way. I was like, I didn't know if that was something that was kind of coming up today, because I was just like, I have thoughts on that.
No, absolutely. That was actually the next topic. I thought
it was just like, this is a good time to bring it up. You know, it's
you know, you know what, Steve? You want to talk about it? Fine. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, if anyone wants to talk about
PS5 Pro, please. I mean, I'm done with the PS5 Pro. Like, it's all...
I have one last thing. I mean, we can arrive here at Speculation Station. What's this bad boy going to cost?
$1,000.
What's the slim going?
I looked it up. It's $550 for the digital version.
Oh, it's going to be like $800.
$800.
It's $650 for the disc version of the PS5 Slim. And this is GameSpot numbers.
I'll say it'll be
$1,000.
No, I'm gonna say 800.
I'm gonna say probably the top end 650.
So $5 USD.
Yeah.
But you know.
I was gonna say if it's able to do all of this and it comes with a disc drive, $699 is the absolute top of the line that Sony can do. If they go any higher, they are out of their minds.
I mean, everything else has to go down in price then.
You would
assume. Yeah, maybe they do like a $599 and then reduce slim.
That would make more sense. Yeah.
Maybe. Drop $50 off. Oh, actually, the fifty bucks off. From the disc version to to $599, and then maybe
just launch at $599.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the regular digital PS5 at like $499.
Slim right now is $650.
Yeah, that's for the disc version.
Yeah.
$650.
Yeah. So
I just don't think that Sony can get away with doing like 700 and above consoles. That's what killed them with the PlayStation 3 initially. Was how much more expensive it was. And I don't think the world's ready for that.
It's Sony, and they want their money. That's their strategy right now. They're not they don't have the games to be able to coming out at a rate that, you know, it's not like we're going to get like a Spider-Man 2 every year now. I mean, the biggest game for them this year supposedly is going to probably be, you know, Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, and that's not their game. It's an exclusive, but it's not their game. And so if we're not going to get any exclusives this year,
I don't think they need this year. I think that they need to come out in holiday and say, hey, listen, you love PlayStation so much. Get a PlayStation 5 Pro. And here are all our studios, and they're ready for you, baby. And it's Ghost of Tsushima in the spring. I
would love Bloodborne that.
I think that's the play, 100%. There's no reason otherwise to be quiet.
Why would you ruin your fiscal 2024 for a really good 2025?
Because if the games can't run,
like that to me doesn't make sense though.
Yeah. But like, are these games ready early 2025? So it will still be part of the 2024.
I mean, you It'd could
be
you
know, March.
You anything before March? But they've already said that they're not doing anything until after March.
What the hell?
So they're going to take a loss on 2024, and that's exactly what's going to happen. Like it's.
I also think that it's not a coincidence that even Kojima is not releasing Death Stranding until 2025. To me, it's all lining up of like signs, everyone's on ice, everyone's waiting for better hardware. for a reason. That's the only thing that makes sense.
I
don't know.
I mean, I could see that for sure. I mean, we've had that many discussions about Nintendo. Like, that makes sense. Have a good lineup, have a good amount of consoles available at launch, because you know it, like, Nintendo knows it's going to be a hit. But Sony,
that's a poor design, like, then.
I don't think that as much as, you know, they say, you know, player focus, whatever, like, we're doing this for the players. I don't they still have to make money. And I don't think that they're going to sacrifice a bad 2024 just so they can have an amazing 2025. Like, they screwed up point blank. The fact that there is no big, huge exclusives. And here's the thing. I'm, you know, even on the exclusive side of the conversation, I'm all for, you know, games to as many consoles and as many platforms as possible. But we're not Sony's playbook is not in that realm yet. It's still in we have exclusives. We have these games that are you can only play on PlayStation 5, and they do it like that's they're still in the console, you know, regular 7-year cycle. And the fact that they don't have a premium launch first party launch title first party title for 2024. They screwed up somewhere, or, you know, things got so badly delayed that, you know, they're going to have to take a loss on this 2024. And I don't know if releasing a PS5 Pro is going to do it for them, because they don't have the games they're going to be able to take advantage of that PS5 Pro.
That we know of.
Sure. I mean, I will say this with a caveat of, could be, you know, some fun announcements around June, like whatever showcase they decide to put out at that point. But now we don't know. Like, the biggest hit is Final Fantasy. That's it.
Remake 10-2 and then make me happy personally.
Yeah, but that's going to be another time exclusive. Like, I think Final Fantasy is only a 6-month window exclusive, by the way.
I don't know. There was a remake that's still,
not on any other platforms.
Yeah, it's still not on Xbox. We've been waiting for a couple of years for that one since 2020 for potentially Final Fantasy.
I'm happy with that.
True.
Okay.
And I get what you're saying. See, like, I do think that there is a detractor in not having like a proper first party game.
Yeah.
But I would also argue that Sony has had an incredible first quarter of this year, and that no one can stop talking about Sony, whether it's Helldivers, Final Fantasy, Rise of the Ronin coming out. They've also got just launched the show. They have Stellar Blade on the horizon. I mean, and we don't know about their non-franchised IP that are coming out this year. I think that they could pad out the rest of the year with stuff like, you know, Marathon or Concord.
For sure. But when they're going to compare the, you know, the fiscals between last year and this year.
You're totally right. Yeah.
They're going to be I'm hoping that, you know, the projections are not like expecting, you know, an increase because you're right. Like, they definitely do have some decent games on the lineup right now. And they already have some pretty decent games that released on the PS5, but that's Helldivers, I don't think anyone really fully expected that to be a huge hit. But I think people were focusing on Final Fantasy VII. Like, that was the hit for them. But that's not also their game. Like, that's a Square Enix game. They're just partnering with PlayStation for the exclusivity rights. And they probably Square Enix probably had to pay a pretty penny to play a pretty penny to be able to have that exclusive. So they're losing money off of that. So they're not gaining as much money as they could with their first party titles. And sure, they could have a few third parties that could definitely pad out those financials, but I mean, I'm not expecting them to have a good 2024, and I don't know. I just don't think that they're like saving up games for 2025 just because. I think it's just they got into a massive delay with a lot of their games, or they've had a lot of games they canceled within the past year or two, and they're now, you know, scrambling to try to be able to get, you know, some partnerships to be able to at least pad out their rest of their year, because I think that's what they're doing. I think they're just trying to be able to like just survive this year.
Yeah. Well, one thing that the Sony is doing, and this one's for you, Steve Saylor, is that they hit the pause button on PS5 VR2 production, as there's a lot of inventory that they can't get rid of. This, you know, $550 accessory has suffered from a lack of compelling content, and now apparently Sony's also testing out PC capabilities, which I don't know how you're only now doing this.
Here's, Here's the thing.
Take it away, Steve.
This is the issue I have. Okay. I love the PSVR 2. I think it's a great headset, but there has been a few things that technically I used it. You know, I was thankfully given one from by PlayStation. Thank you, PlayStation, for, you know, allowing me to be able to review it. It was like the games that they had available at launch was great, but they only had two titles that basically that were first party from PlayStation that were, you know, exclusive to the PSVR 2. Horizon Call of the Mountain and Gran Turismo 7. Mm-hmm. And you can even argue that technically Gran Turismo 7, you don't even need to buy that that game in order to be able to get the VR. Like, that's a separate, like, you don't need to buy the PSVR 2 in order to be able to enjoy Gran Turismo 7. You needed to for Horizon Call of the Mountain. Okay. Here's the two exact reasons as to why the PSVR 2 did not sell. A, barely any first-party support, like I said, because other than those two games that I mentioned, is there any other game that's on PlayStation that PlayStation VR 2 that is like, oh, this is what you need a PSVR 2 headset to get to play?
Yeah, Resident Evil Village, Resident Evil 4.
Right, but they're all third party. They're all available also on other platforms.
How's there no Astro?
There's no Astro. I'm not even expecting like them to be able to make like a God of War or The Last of Us VR. Like, I'm not expecting them to be able to you know, take development time from those studios to be able to make this, but it'd be cool. I would love it. I would freaking like, that would be amazing. But there has not, like, it released last year. There hasn't been like barely any games that have come out for it, except for games that were already on other platforms. So that's one reason why sales have failed. Also, you need to be able to spend, you need to be able to buy the thing in order, like, you need to buy a PS5 in order to be able to even to be able to use the PSVR 2 headset. And you know how much Canadian the PSVR 2 headset is going for right now?
As much as a kidney.
$750 Canadian. Oh, that's at Best Buy right now. Our mutual friend at Walmart, you know, Walmart Gaming Canada, Riley Little, at walmart.ca, $750. That's just for the headset.
Whew.
If you want to be able to get the bundle of that plus Horizon Call of the Mountain, it's $820 at Best Buy.
Is there a combo with the headset and the system?
You would have to spend $1,300 Canadian just to have access to be able to play PSVR 2 games. That's not including any PSVR 2 games at all. But if you look at it on the other side, you know, because there's the Meta Quest 3, right? So you want to know what the price is for that?
$250.
So the 128 gigabyte version, and it comes with Asgard's Wrath 2. At Best Buy, it's $650. It's $200 cheaper than the PSVR 2 headset
alone,
and you don't need a PC or anything else to run it. That was their biggest problem. It was too expensive at a time when no one's spending money excess amount of money on gaming accessories, and you still needed a PS5 to run it. Plus, you could also say technically as well, it wasn't even wireless because you had to have a freaking long cable in order to be able to to connect the dang thing. And sure, it comes with it, but you know, that's definitely not a selling factor when the other one that is the $200 cheaper is wireless, and it apparently actually works a lot better than the PSVR 2. So them saying, the rumors of them saying that they're going to be able to put it on PC or available, you know, you can be able to use the headset on PC. I hope to God it is, because, hey, at least gives you know, a little extra life on my end to be able to be able to use it. But I think it was they dropped the ball severely, and it was it had so much potential. I loved the PSVR when it first came out. Sure, it was weird having to be able to have that HD camera with the Move wands, and basically the only way to be able to do tracking on it was basically the lights that were on the headset, and you couldn't turn your head because otherwise it would lose tracking. Like, sure, I could see that, you know, based on what they had available technology wise at the time, it was definitely a mess. But it had some pretty decent games that I actually did love playing. But The PSVR 2 has had almost zero support from PlayStation. It was like they wanted to make it because they wanted to put something on the market and they wanted to get money off of it. And they basically sold people on a bill of goods on it and they gave us nothing.
Sounds like the
PS5. I think a little bit of a contextual note there is that the development for PSVR 2 happened immediately after the initial release of PSVR 1. Which happened in like a totally different, like two different eras now that when we started looking at PlayStation. So it's just kind of funny to see how much of like a strategic shift Sony has had since like the Sean Layden days, who essentially greenlit this whole project of like, okay, now we're going to figure out how to make it better and everything. Right. And then, yeah, obviously,
but here's the thing, Jim
Ryan stepped in and we're seeing it right now with all the layoffs. Like they closed London studio, which had a direct impact on PSVR. Layoffs hit Firesprite too, which developed Horizon Call of the Bound. So
yeah,
it really does seem that during the Jim Ryan era, they were like, we don't care about this. It's a passion project. Get it out there. We'll make a quick buck off of it, and then.
I wonder if it was sort of like they just had like so much animosity towards Sean Layden that they were like, we're going to cancel all his projects or like, you know, let it die. I don't know if that's like there's no substantiated or like any information about that. But it's like, you know, you start to kind of speculate because it's like you're right, because it was Sean Layden's project. But here's the thing, even too, like when the PSVR came out, this is pre, you know, Meta Quest or Oculus Quest at the time. And at the time, it was the cheapest VR headset to get. It was the most consumer level access you can be able to get for VR, because a lot of people, you know, had PlayStation 4s, and all you really needed was, if you get the full bundle, yeah, it's a little bit expensive, like a couple $100s, but at the time it was the cheapest option. And in a period where now we have where VR has technology has kind of grown so much, and where Meta Quest is basically just running circles around every other VR headset that's out there, including the PSVR 2, it just baffles my mind that they let this thing go out there and, you know, people had to buy it and people played it and they basically got nothing else for it. It was a waste of money for them. Sure, I'm certain there's people that like absolutely loved it and bought a lot of games for it, and that was their entry into VR, and that they played so many amazing games that are on there, great. But it was like that's a basically an FU to the consumer, I think.
What they should have done is just copy Meta and acquire a company who was already ahead of the game. And like I think that's the reason why Meta is where they're at with their headset, because they didn't have to do any of the work. They just took it and then continued on what was already kind of awesome.
I mean, yeah, they kind of did. Insomniac Games was making VR games for Meta. And then they're like, now we like you on Spider-Man. Do Spider-Man forever.
Do all Marvel forever.
Yeah, do all Marvel games for the rest of eternity. Ratchet and Clank, not a chance.
Sorry.
Not a chance, my friends.
Man, imagine a good Ratchet and Clank VR game.
But I think that's really the thing, is that we can keep coming back to, is that at a certain point they saw the investment, they saw, hey, if we pile a whole bunch of money into the tech, the DualSense integrations, the comfort of it. I mean, I have one. Again, PlayStation provided me one. I didn't have to pay for one, so take it that as you will. I still find the PSVR 2 my preferred VR headset.
Yeah, same.
Without the, you know, the constrictions of a wire, but I think it's the most comfortable. I think it's the most advanced in terms of resolution. So the tech itself and everything was, in my opinion, worth the investment. But I do think that once the baton was passed from Sean Layden to Jim Ryan, he said, no, we cannot invest any more into these studios. We cannot invest any more into these projects, aside from what's already too far into development, which, in my opinion, just on how we see it now, with the headset itself, I think that Jim Ryan already saw, hey, we can't cancel this. We put too much money into it.
Yeah.
I can't cancel Horizon. We're too far into it. Everything else, stop it. Pull the plug. We got to start investing into the console specific stuff. It's similar to kind of like PlayStation Portal, where at a certain point, I'm sure Jim Ryan looked at that and was like, just put it on store shelves. I don't care about it. We have to just concentrate on the core experience. And everything else can be either a net loss or a net balance. And I think PSVR 2 is kind of that thing where I think, you know, they definitely had the third party support. You see that from Capcom specifically, the amount of just innovation that you see, whether it's from Resident Evil Village or Resident Evil 4 VR. Both of those are incredible experiences. They've also, you know, had an unwieldy support from like the indie studios and everything like that. But it does come down to the fact that, yeah, we don't have a God of War throw the Leviathan axe simulator. How do we go through an entire VR generation without that? That's the easiest W ever.
Yeah.
I know that there are some like logistics and gyroscopic issues with making like a Spider-Man VR. You have Insomniac. You stole Insomniac. Like there was so little money that you guys had to put out for Insomniac games, and then mm-hmm. you just relegate them to making core, which I understand, don't get me wrong. But even a small team to just make a Spider-Man VR thing. I'm blanking on the name, but the studio that they partnered with to make Iron Man VR, where's a follow-up to that? That game was brilliant. That game made you feel like Iron Man. There's so many. Oh,
it's out. It's out on the PSVR 2, and it's also out on Meta Quest 3. Like,
no, I'm just saying, like, where's the follow-up? Like, right. Oh, do something okay. else. Yeah. Make Thor. Make Thor throw the Mjolnir. Do whatever. I don't care. Doctor Strange. Like, you can, if you want to go in with Sony or with Disney into all these properties, why not partner with that? Like, I just like don't understand.
There's so much untapped simulator potential. Game or something.
Right?
I just swinging like around New York as Spider-Man?
Shooting webs at enemies. Yeah. You don't even have to swing around because I'm sure that would make me throw up immediately. Most but likely, yeah. You could do something fun with it. Yeah, I just don't understand. Or I'm even just going back to the original PSVR. I mean, you had the entirety of Borderlands 2 in VR. Like that, you just don't have those experiences on the new headset. So I feel like, yeah, unfortunately, they just didn't see the cost potential or the value there and just kind of pulled the plug off of it, which sucks because, again, I'm a supporter of the headset. I really enjoy it. I use it maybe once a month. Beat Saber is still my number one go-to. And yeah, anytime I see like a cool little indie game come out for the headset, I just install it. I support it. And I won't ever do that again, though. PSVR 3 is a no-go for me. I don't have the faith anymore.
Well, we'll see.
I'm trying to be able to look up to see if because it's Camouflage is the studio that made Iron Man VR. They also made another game called Republic, but I don't think I played that one. But they like there's a thing on their website right now from Ryan Payton that says that they were acquired by Meta to work.
That makes
on
sense. I do remember that news. Okay.
Yeah. So
fair enough. Fair play.
That just goes to show you. They have anything else is like as far as like anything new other than last or basically the last update they had was in 2022 of November when they announced that it was good, like Iron Man VR was going to be going to Meta Quest 2, which yeah. It was an original PSV VR right. exclusive title. Yeah. So.
And I mean, it's not entirely doom and gloom for the headset. They did on their anniversary, they came out with this entire PS blog just being like, here's some really like marquee tentpole third party games that are coming. Metro yeah. Awakening VR looks incredible.
Oh, that's a day like one purchase aboard. For me. Yeah.
They also, you know, did it was then that they started talking about PC plans. And I think at some point in 2024, they're going to release it. I think that's super smart just to get a little more longevity out of there. If I can use my headset, bring it up to my office here, plug it in and play Half-Life Alyx, since Valve for some reason won't bring it to PlayStation. Fine. If I can tap a little more value out of the headset, I think that's all we can kind of hope for at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking, like I said, I'm looking forward to the day where, yeah, I can be able to use it on my PC. Because like you said, like it is an extremely comfortable headset. Yeah. And it, like, honestly, I prefer that than my Meta Quest 2 that I have. Mm-hmm. I have not tried a Meta Quest 3, so I don't know what that feels like. I would still love to be able to get one, but right, you know,
yeah.
it'd be expansive. I would love to be able to, you know, I like, cause here's the thing. I have Half-Life Alyx installed on my PC. I have yet to play it because I was waiting to be able to have like a really decent headset to be able to play it on. And I was thinking about doing it on the Meta Quest 2. But when I heard that, you know, that there were rumors of it being like PSVR 2 being compatible for PC at some point, I'm like, okay, I'm waiting till that. And that's that's the first game I'm going to want to play on it. And if it can work with Steam VR, then amazing. Then that's the headset I will probably want to be able to keep playing. So you're right. Like, it is an extremely amazing headset. It just sucks that basically PlayStation decided to not support it and also make it cheaper. And I think I know that my sort of opinion is tainted because of the fact I got it for free. Yep. I wouldn't. And here's the thing. If you ask me, would I still use it personally? Yes. Would I recommend people buy it? No.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's way too expensive.
Yeah.
That's, well, we'll see what happens. Jim Ryan has 12 days left, so who knows what will happen in 12 days.
Jim Ryan countdown starts now.
Starts now. 12 days of Jim. So who knows?
Bring in Hiroki Totoki.
Yeah, who knows? Hopefully he doesn't release anything else, you know, or...
Maybe he loves PSVR. Maybe Totoki is going to come in and he's going to be like, listen... Complete pivot. We're off games as a service. We're doubling down on PSVR. We're going to acquire all these studios. We're going to get the Moss studio. We're making Moss 3 exclusive to PSVR.
Maybe.
I'm here for it.
We'll wait and see. Sammy, what's going on for you for the rest of the week?
What is going on with me the rest of the week? Not much. Probably a couple of articles, right? Mm-hmm. Do that. More Divinity 2. I think in the foreseeable future, you could just assume I'm trying to play Divinity 2. Right,
you have to tell us when you just finished the game at this point. So,
all right, see you next.
I look forward to talking to you in October.
Yeah. Awesome. Steve Saylor.
Right on. Yeah, I'm gonna be I'll see you soon in person at PAX East. I'll be flying out there Thursday morning. I've got a panel Thursday night called Stream to Dream or Dream to Stream. We're basically, you know, taking skills that you learn in streaming and advancing it into your next career. So I'll be on that. I also have a secret project that I'm going to be filming while I'm also there that might be Dungeons and Disabled related. So I'm excited.
Spill the beans. Not just yet.
You'll see. but also, yeah. So I got that. You know, it just I'm looking forward to being able to play. Actually, I will say, you know, speaking of games I want to stream, mm-hmm. I may actually jump into, now that, you know, I've got Dungeons and Disabled out the door, I may want to be able to jump in and do some Baldur's Gate 3. And I've never actually gotten past Act 1. And I kind of want to start over just because, like, I think I screwed up in a lot of ways. So I think I want to start over as a brand new character and just and finally explore. So who knows? Maybe I might start streaming some Baldur's Gate 3 sometime soon. We'll see.
All right. Steve V, how about yourself?
Well, first off, thoughts and prayers to both Sammy and Steve, who are lost in the void of deep, deep, deep RPGs. It's a trying time for us. I mean, as you can see from the squares around us, we are dropping like flies here. We cannot let anyone else get sucked up with, the most encumbrance of games out there. And so I'm going to sink more time into games. I'm going to be playing Dragon's Dogma 2 for a long time. Rise of the Ronin is still keeping my attention. And then I got to get back to Rebirth at some point. If we could just put a little thumbtack in gaming right now and just say no more. Just no more.
Yeah,
just
please.
Slow down.
I mean, that's what the holiday season's for. No one's releasing anything from Nintendo.
The fact that it's March and we have three pretty notable games coming out all on the same day, that's ludicrous. We got to save that for the October fun time when we're winding down for the holidays, not now. Not now when PAX is happening.
GDC too.
So and GDC as well.
Half the industry's gone. Who's playing games?
There's not been that much news this week because everyone's all at GDC.
everyone's keeping their head down because of Gamergate. It's back. We got the sequel.
Yeah.
I got a little bit of a extra harassment today because I was on the CBC talking about that. So that was fun. gotta love Gamergate 2.0.
Oh boy. Well, myself, I'll also be at PAX East. I'm on a panel at 1 p.m. I had to look for it because I'm like, what time am I on again? On this Thursday. It's called Cybersecurity Hygiene for Creators. So, you know, change your damn passwords, everyone. This is your time to remember. For Steve V, maybe you have like a little 15-minute clock to like remind yourself to save your game as well. Just a little, does a little
house. Oh my goodness, you're so right.
Just be like, just
this is bringing me back to like, you know, like Xbox 360, PS3, you know, Bethesda days, where it's like, okay, time to manually save, because who knows when Fallout 3 is going to crash on me.
Exactly. Yep. I also want to give a special shout out to Steve as well. Steve V, he also did a interview with Victor Lucas. We did one ourselves. Both of them are both available. So check out Console Creatures and our own as well. You will get a full load of Victor Lucas love and Electric Playground love. I can honestly talk to that man for hours. I'm going to be honest.
Same. With you, so. Yeah, he's a wonderfully humble and sweet man. What an inspiration. But I'm looking forward to the return of, you know, EP coming on, you know, March live 23rd. Streaming on YouTube. Yep, I'm going to be there in the chat when it premieres. I can't wait. It's going to hit me with so much nostalgia.
All right, so grab your cereal bowls, check that out. And also, I want to give out from some friends of ours, from Matt Court and Rice Boy as well. Console Creatures, those are really, well, you know, since this is like a PlayStation episode, let's just include them in as well. PlayStation Generations is going to be available on the 25th as well. So I'm not playing any games this week. I'm going to PAX East. You know, gaming can pause for a little bit. So
that's be great. Please.
I could be booting up Balatro on the way there. You don't want that game to consume your life?
I see many of my friends. I'm losing many friends out there. You know,
I'm still here. Steve, are you doing it?
Downloaded it yesterday.
I heard the little Nintendo sound. Oh my god!
I have not played it yet, but it's there. It's available. Oh, I also have Super Mario Wonder in there too. So you know,
You can delete that one though. It's not going to have your attention. Balatro.
Did you just say out loud? Delete Super Mario Wonder.
No, I'm saying that Balatro is such a it's so addictive and so
move it down in the category list.
Once it gets into your brain, it festers, and all you can think about is cards and the jester cards, and you're gone. You're a husk of a man. All you're doing is playing roguelike poker for the rest of eternity.
He's gonna miss his panel due to this game.
It's a spooky game.
Is it really?
Well, spooky is in terms of how much time it will take away from you. It's not scary.
Okay. Because I was debating on like which console to be able to take with me on like to PAX East, you know, to play on the plane and stuff like that. And I was thinking of between like the ROG Ally, which is my favorite gaming handheld, which like, I guess shout out to Riley because it's now going to be available at Walmart Canada. You can be able to buy it there. I was like, it was either that or the Switch. And once I saw that like Balatro was like $20 on the eShop, I was like, okay, it's time.
It's a wonderful game made by one person, just sold a million copies. I think
is it really one person?
One person made this.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Damn,
it's a genius game. I really do encourage people to go out and support it. I think it's such a revolutionary kind of roguelite game.
Wow, you know, I'm actually kind of glad that I paid for it, even if I never play it. I'm just glad to support, like, the fact that it was one developer and it already sold a million copies. Like, that's huge. Dude, that's
it's crazy. A sleeper hit for sure.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome.
I'm gonna support when I come back after. I don't want to get
all right.
I got work to do. Nintendo just announced they're there now secretly, which is crazy.
That's true.
To me.
Blows my mind.
Yeah, I want the ground scoop. As soon as you get to the booth, I want pictures. I want to know what they did.
Live from the floor. It's Thursday. Yeah.
So they've got Nintendo and Pokemon at PAX East this year, which is interesting. Yeah. They're not together. I looked. The booths are at least like a half of an expo hall away. But
they're not on speaking terms. I see. Okay.
I guess not. I don't know. I mean, it's in a weird spot too, because it's like if you know PAX East or the Boston Convention Center, it's like right when you go down the escalator, it's like on the far right. Oh. And normally, like, there's not like a lot of like big, huge booths that are there. Normally, it's like reserved for like the big, huge studio in front. But I guess Nintendo got in late because, you know, they're going to be there. Did you get an invite for anything, Marcel, for that?
Nothing. The only thing I got is nothing? For Daredrop. That's it.
For Daredrop. Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna need to figure out how I can get myself into the Nintendo booth. That's what I need to do.
I mean, like, I just find it a little odd that all of a sudden now they're just showing up. This can't be for Princess Peach.
I guarantee you it is.
Probably.
You would be shocked if it's anything else.
Where is Camille when we need her?
Probably at the booth. I'm not going to lie. She's probably setting up the statue right now.
She might be there.
I don't know.
I don't think so. She said she might be.
She's in China right now, isn't
yeah.
she?
No, but I remember she said she'll be back in time for.
That's a hop and a skip to Boston. Come on, she'll be there tomorrow.
Exactly. It's a boat ride away. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. See you all next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.